For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me here for this Thursday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99 and also at EthosFantasyBB. That is where you get all the latest updates on our articles, podcasts, anything in our draft guide, really any baseball content. We either post it from there directly or share it out through a retweet or a quote tweet on that account. So make sure you guys are following along there and checking out our draft guide if you have not done so already. By the time you guys are hearing this, there will be an update to the Orrico 250, which is what we're calling my top 250 player rankings, and projections are also going to get a look over the weekend as well. But the top 250 will be my most updated rankings, and they will be updated by the time you guys are hearing this. I've already updated it. I just need to put it onto the site, and that will be done right after, while this episode is actually posting. So make sure you're checking out our draft guide. My rankings and projections are just one part of it. We have a ton of articles in there. Strategy, sleepers and busts. We're looking at draft reviews, both mocks and real money drafts. There's a ton of stuff for you guys to be checking out at the link that I have put in the description of the episode. So make sure you guys are clicking on that and checking out all we have to offer there. Today we are going to be reviewing my draft in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational, TGFBI. If you're on Twitter, I'm sure you've seen people posting their draft boards and talking about their team. I didn't do it so much this year. Last year I was talking about it a lot. I wanted to keep it more on the podcast side this season. I posted up my first couple picks, but after that, we're just going to be talking about it here. So if you're unfamiliar with TGFBI, it is a group of industry fantasy baseball leagues. They're hosted on the NFBC site. There are about 30 different leagues, each 15-team leagues that are Roto 5x5 standard. And it's made up of all people who either produce fantasy baseball content or maybe just straight baseball content. They're podcast hosts, they're writers, they're analysts of some kind. And those are the people who play in these leagues. So you do get a pretty accurate view in the ADP boards. You can view them if you go to the NFBC forums. You can see where different people are drafting players in all these different leagues. And it does give you a pretty accurate view of where people who, like myself, focus on baseball probably a little bit more than we should, are viewing players at this point in time. These were slow drafts that took place over the last week and a half or so. My draft finished yesterday. It was one of the fastest leagues. Usually, like last year, my league took, I think it was close to 3 weeks to finish the draft. This year it was actually pretty quick and smooth. So thanks to everybody who was in my league for that. A lot of people you guys know, John Legaza, Jesse Roche, tons of people in this league, Mike Mayer from Fantasy Pros. So there's a lot of people who do cover this game pretty religiously who are in this league with me. And it was a tough league. Pitching was pushed up a lot. Like, there was no, you know, easy marks. There's nobody who's like, oh, they're going to pick somebody stupid. Like, every pick was a pretty intelligent pick across the board. So I'm going to break down my team for you here. Starting in round one, and I had the 11th pick here, and I took Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani, I think, is looking pretty damn good from what we've seen so far. I was a little bit worried about if he's going to be, like, ready for opening day, but he's pretty clearly looks like he's going to be ready for opening day. And if he's just going to be a hitter, I don't really have that much concern, right? Like, last year, if you just look at what he did offensively, looking at WRC+, which is kind of a flawed stat, I don't love it. Like, for fantasy purposes, it's, I don't know. Some people really like it. I'm not a huge fan of it. But Shohei Ohtani, based on WRC+, was 10% better offensively than Ronald Acuna Jr. was. He was far and away the best offensive player in Major League Baseball. Getting him at the 11th pick, even though he is in my utility slot, I don't really care about that so much when the talent is just so elite in Ohtani that it's not like it's like some schmuck who's jamming up the spot. It's probably 40 home runs, maybe 15, 20, 25 stolen bases, anywhere in that type of range. He's hitting 280. He's probably driving in more than 100, scoring at least 100. Shohei Ohtani, I think, is the 11th overall pick for me was the way to go. The guys who went in order in the first round was Acuna, Witt, Strider at 3, Julio, Carroll, Tucker, Betts, Tatis, Freeman, and Soto before me. So Shohei Ohtani really did make the most sense for me at pick 11. In the second round, and it's funny, I did the exact same thing in TGFBI last year. I took Austin Riley. It's the same first and second round picks as last season. Ohtani in the first and Riley in the second. So first off there, I'm getting a piece of the two best lineups in baseball, I think. You know, the Dodgers and the Braves. There's not much dispute there. I think they're clearly the two best, and you're getting a cornerstone in both of those offenses. They're both 100 and 100 type of threats with 35, 40 home runs. So right there, that combo I think is really lethal. I'm not getting stolen bases out of Riley, really. Maybe he gives me a couple, but that's not so much a concern. I think I did compensate for that, and we will get to that. But again, I'm getting a high batting average for a guy who at a position where batting average is not really the greatest at third base. If you look generally at the position, I'm also not really that sold on how deep the position is as a whole. It really does kind of fall off after the first few names. So locking in Riley, I think, does give me a lot of security in round two. And then in round three, I went with Jose Altuve. So again, if you want to have any dispute about the top two offenses in baseball, you might want to argue that Houston's in there. Well, I got a piece of Houston's offense as well and got a cornerstone, again, at kind of a more scarce position in second base, one that I'm not totally in love with. I think it's decent, but it's not amazing still. So again, with those first three rounds, I have a piece of the three best offenses in baseball. All of them are good batting average guys. I have a lot of power between the three of them that should be well over 100 home runs, runs and RBIs. Again, all three of these guys could potentially, maybe Altuve is not going to get 100 RBI, but 100 runs for all of them is in the book, in maybe not in the books, but you know, pretty sure thing if they're healthy anyway. Altuve is going to fall behind in the RBIs a little bit, but he will compensate for the lack of stolen bases that I'm not going to be getting with Austin Riley. I'm probably going to be getting at least 20-plus with Jose Altuve. So I think between those first three picks, my offense is really, really off to a nice start there with those guys. Now, pitching, I alluded to it, pitching was really, really flying off the board early on. And by the time round four came to me, a lot of those aces were off the board. Wheeler, Castillo, Gausman, Yamamoto, Kirby, Lopez, Gallen, Glasnow, Cole, Aaron Nola, Framber Valdez. Those guys were all off the board. But I was able to get a guy that is, in my rankings, a top 10 starting pitcher this year, and that's Logan Webb. Now, he's somebody, again, from a volume standpoint, is a really, really safe bet. He doesn't have the per-inning strikeout type of upside that I would necessarily love, but I think he does get you there from a volume standpoint, right? As long as he's healthy. And again, for a lot of these guys, you have to kind of say as long as he's healthy, because you can't just say he's going to throw me 200 innings, because it's not a guarantee with anybody, right? We might say Marcus Semien's going to play 162 games. It's not a guarantee. We think he probably is, but nothing is necessarily guaranteed. Webb seems like a very, very safe bet to throw 200 innings. And if he does, I think that's probably 185 or so strikeouts, really good ratios. And at that point, he should be able to give me double-digit win total as well. I really like him as an SP1 there, and I backed him up in round five with Max Fried as my SP2. They're kind of co-aces on the squad. Max Fried, it's more of an injury concern. When I did the episode with Eno Saris and Nick Pollock a few weeks ago, which actually has been far and away the most downloaded episode that we've ever done here on the show, surprise, surprise, with those two guys coming on, we did talk about Max Fried and how I was probably a little higher than those guys were in terms of where I had him at the time. It was about 14th for me there, and Nick and Eno had him at 21, 22, 23 type of range. I've moved him down a couple of spots because I do think that there is some injury risk. Eno did kind of scare me talking about, rhyming off some statistics about the recurrence of elbow injuries once you've already had one. It's not great. Again, the exact metrics, he rhymed them off, the percentage. It's like 70 or 80% chance it's going to recur, something along those lines. So that does kind of scare me. But I think with the security I have in Webb, even if Fried doesn't give me an entire season's worth of innings pitched, right? Even if Max Fried is only able to throw 130, 140 innings, between the two of them, Webb and Fried, that should be like a 330, 340. And that's like standard for two starters, 170 apiece. There's not a lot of pitchers who are going to be able to kind of sustain that kind of workload in today's environment. So even if Fried, assuming there's nothing catastrophic that happens, let's say he does have to miss a couple of starts, he's very, very safe on a per-start basis, pitching for one of the best teams in baseball. So the wins are there. The ratios have been there. Sub-3 ERA guy pretty much every year. He is somebody that I really, really like this year if he's able to stay healthy, which, again, it is a question, maybe more so for him than other pitchers. But I think, again, with the Webb combo, it does make sense for the team build. I went with O'Neill Cruz in round 6. I've talked about this pretty openly. I've been pretty in on O'Neill Cruz. I don't think that his injury last year was really anything that's going to recur necessarily. Knock on wood, it's not an indication of being injury prone. He got hurt on a bad slide. There's nothing there to say that it's going to happen again necessarily. I'm sure that they've worked with him on sliding techniques a little bit after that. Maybe even just to ingest a little bit, just to say, hey, O'Neill, maybe, think about your slides a little more, and I'm sure that that'll be something that is in his head a little bit. So I'm not really that concerned. We're still talking about a guy who could potentially be a 30-30 bat. The batting average is not going to be exceptional, probably. We're probably talking 250, 260, but between Ohtani, Riley, and Altuve, like, Ohtani's a guy who could potentially be 300, probably in the 280 range. Riley's like 280, 290, and Altuve is in that same type of range. I have a lot of security up top. Even if Cruz is in the 260 range, I'm not overly concerned about that. And I filled another position that I don't love waiting on. Like, a shortstop is deep to a point, but once it falls off, like, it falls off dramatically. So I think I've locked in a really solid infield core there with Riley, Altuve, and O'Neill Cruz. It's very similar to my to a couple of teams from last year. These guys, I guess over time you do develop favorites, and this is a classic type of Joe Orico type of team here. And it continues with Ryan Helsley in round 7 as my first closer. Closer was the position outside of Helsley. We'll get into this later as I go through this draft more, where I kind of lacked closer. And it's something that I do kind of struggle with in 15-team leagues. I always think I can wait a little bit longer, and then there just ends up being a streak of like 5 or 6 closers that go off the board. And it's like, Jesus Christ, I just lost all of them. And that kind of happened here, but I'm glad I secured Helsley as my number one guy. I don't think there's any concern about job security or talent or anything, really. When he came back last year, he was his old self, and people haven't really considered that as much. Like, if you forget how dominant he was in 2022, he was pretty close to that when he came back last year. Maybe not quite to the same extent because he was like on a God-level tier in 2022, but he was still damn good. And I think locking him in as my first closer, in round 7 of a 15-team league, I think is a really good price to pay for him. Now, again, you're always going to lack in a couple of places, one or two anyway, in a 15-team league. There's just no way to be flush everywhere. And the position that I was lacking in currently was outfield. So my number one outfielder that I locked in was Seiya Suzuki. Seiya Suzuki, I think, is, again, just another guy where it's, is he going to be able to stay healthy? And that there is a little bit of concern with that on my team for a couple of guys. But 138 games last year, 111 the year prior. Even if I get 140 games out of him, that's totally fine if I have to use somebody else as a replacement for a week or two. He's projected to go for, based on the different projection systems, generally about 22, 23 homers and about 10 stolen bases. That's pretty damn good, especially when you factor in that he's about a 270 batting average. And also, being in a decent lineup, he's projected as about 150 runs in RBIs, about 75 and 75. It varies a little bit depending on the system. Some are 76, 77, 78, 74 type of deal. But I really like Seiya Suzuki this year. As a number one outfield, like, I'd prefer him as my number two outfield, but considering I kind of punted the position early on, I think that's a pretty damn good name to land on there.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Moving into round 9, I went with Bryson Stott, and I talked about this on Twitter a couple weeks ago. I already have Jose Altuve, but just because I have a guy at that position, it shouldn't make you not want to draft a guy, especially, I mean, this varies based on your league type, but if you have those middle infield, corner infield spots, it shouldn't bother you so much to draft the second guy at that position if it fits your team and if it all makes sense. And I think that Bryson Stott really does make sense. He's another guy who kind of contributes across the board here. And I think the deficit that I had on my team is stolen bases, if there is anything, right? Because Otani's not a massive steal guy. He's like 20 or so. Altuve's like 20 or so. Suzuki's like 10. Cruz is potentially like a 30 guy. But I think it was a position where I was a little bit lacking in terms of stolen bases. So I think Bryson Stott really does secure that and pretty much everything outside of maybe power. I'm not going to be getting more than probably 15 home runs from him. 17 would be like a big win, I think. But again, Otani's like 40. Riley's like 35, 40. Altuve could be like 30, but he's probably maybe 25. Cruz, let's call it 25. Suzuki, 20. There's a lot of power there. So I don't really need to worry about that part of it so much. So I really like Bryson Stott in round 9. I can put him at that middle infield slot, and I feel totally fine with that. Now, into round 10, I went with Chris Bassett. And actually, I might as well double tap this. Round 10 and 11, I went with Chris Bassett and Jose Berríos. This is a point of the draft where a lot of pitchers were flying off the board. It was what we like to call a yellow brick road on the NFBC because if you're looking at if you're on Twitter, you know what I'm talking about. You've seen people post their drafts and the actual draft boards, and pitchers, their tiles are yellow. So when you see a lot of pitchers go in a row, it's generally referred to as a yellow brick road. I was kind of losing a lot of options here, so I went with Chris Bassett and Jose Berríos. These are not homer picks. These are just guys that I think are, again, very durable. They're not massive strikeout guys on a per-inning basis, but they're guys who are generally going to give me good ratios. I don't think the team is going to be terribly good, but they should both be close to double-digit wins, if not above that. I believe Bassett had 15 wins last year. Like, I think you could see like 13 or so wins from these guys. Strikeouts are going to lack, like I said, on a per-inning basis, but you're getting 180, 190 innings out of them. I mean, Bassett threw 200 last year. I don't see any reason to doubt like they can be close to a strikeout per inning. Yeah, a little bit less. Like, not a full strikeout per inning, guys, but when you're getting that kind of volume, I really think it does make up for it, as opposed to taking a guy like, I don't know, like a Dylan Cease type, who I actually still pretty, I like him, and we're going to talk about him tomorrow when we're going through my quick hit notes from today. I really like Dylan Cease, but he has a potential to, you know, blow up your ERA and your whip as much as he can be a 200 strikeout guy, and he probably will be. There are risks that come along with him that I just don't see with the Bassetts and the Berríoses of the world, who are going to be innings eaters, even if they're not going to be those massive punch-out type of guys. Moving into round 12, I went with Ian Happ. I really wanted TJ Friedl here, and I got sniped big time. I got sniped a few times in this draft, actually, but this was the first one that really stung. I wanted TJ Friedl, but I went with Ian Happ again, and I didn't realize it at the time, but my two outfielders are both members of the Chicago Cubs. I don't love what we're hearing recently. There was something about hamstring tightness, and he was going to take part in batting practice yesterday, and I think he did. So I don't think it's a massive concern. Not what I love to be hearing. And of course, this was a slow draft. I picked him, and then this news came out a couple days after. Would I have drafted him there if I had known this? I still honestly might have. He's somebody who can give me a very similar line to what Suzuki's going to give me. Again, another guy who's like 20 homers, 10 stolen bases, good run in RBI numbers. The batting average is probably not going to be quite as high as Suzuki. He's probably more of like a 250 guy, maybe 260 if things break right for him. He did hit 271 in 2022, so he could potentially do that again, but I'm not banking on massive, massive batting average from him. I just think I have batting average pretty well squared away, especially because in the next round, round 13, I went with Vinny Pasquantino. Man, Vinny P, I think he's getting kind of disrespected in a lot of drafts. Like last year, he was close to a top 100 pick. Yes, he was injured. He had surgery on his labrum, his shoulder, but he's been fine. Like, he's healthy again. Again, it's not a case of like, oh, he's injury prone, he's not going to play this year. Like, he's the same guy he was last year. He's just a year older. Yes, there was an injury in there, but we know he's a guy who could potentially be a 300 type of batting average, 20 plus home runs, chip in a couple steals potentially for you. And again, I think that Royals lineup, it's not great, but it's gotten better. And the whole season there, we could very easily see close to 100 RBIs from him. Steamer has him projected at 85 as the high number. Zips only has him for 62, but they're also only projecting 109 games. Most systems have him projected for about 135 games, close to 80 ribbies, 20 homers, and about a 280 batting average. Again, I think I've built a really balanced team here. There's no category where I am really lacking. I have batting average squared away from a number of spots, and I've kind of secured that even further down the draft that we'll get to. Home runs are pretty secure. I have a lot of 20-plus home run guys. Stolen bases, there's a lot of 10-plus guys and a couple 20-plus guys. So again, I have like at the top three picks were all pieces of the best lineups in baseball. So I think that runs and RBIs are very, very secure, and I think I even solidified that as I went along in the draft as well. So I think that the team is pretty well squared away through 13 rounds, specifically offensively. At this point, the big position where I'm lacking in was saves, and I went with Carlos Estevez. During the course of this draft, it was announced like early on in the draft that Estevez was going to be the closer in Los Angeles for the Angels, that it was not going to be Robert Stevenson. I think that we were kind of just hoping that, as the fantasy world was really just seeing what Stevenson did down the stretch last year and kind of wish casting a job onto him. And we were like, as soon as he got a job, oh, he's going to be the closer. He's going to start the season injured for one, but I think that it was always going to be Estevez, and we might have tricked ourselves into thinking because of how good Stevenson was that he was just going to get a closer job when that wasn't necessarily the case. So Estevez is the guy. I do have to worry a little bit about ratios there, but I do worry that I was going to be falling behind big time in terms of saves. Now, this is a league where you can pick players up throughout the year. It's not like I'm stuck with the guys that I draft, so there will be, you know, save opportunities that do pop up. But at the same time, I don't want to just have Helsley. I do want to have at least like 50 saves so I can get in the draft, potentially 60. If things break right, even if it does set me behind a little bit in the ratios, I think that I have a pretty solid base of pitching. And I think I added to that again in the next round with Christopher Sanchez. You guys know how much I like, and everybody kind of likes Christopher Sanchez. He's one of the industry darlings of the year. He was fantastic in Philadelphia. The supporting metrics were awesome. We know he's going to have a job in the rotation at this point. He's somebody that I've been drafting quite a bit of. And as my fifth starting pitcher, I think a lot of people would really like to see that in a 15-team league. Even like a 12-team league, I think you'll see him as a fifth starting pitcher on some rosters. So in a 15-team league, I'm really, really happy there. Now, I made a couple of picks here. I'm going to jump a couple of rounds as I talk about this one. So in round 16, I went Kyle Finnegan, and then in round 20, I went Hunter Harvey. And this is kind of just my concern, again, about blocking down some saves. I'm not 100% sure who it's going to be. I lean more towards Kyle Finnegan. I think he'll get the majority, but we'll find out probably pretty soon what's going to happen over the first couple of weeks of the year. I don't mind using one of those bench spots for the first couple of weeks. You're going to be starting your regular guys, right? Like, those bench spots really, really matter down the stretch when you're dealing with injuries and whatnot. But the first couple of weeks of the year, while most of your team is healthy, you can pretty easily stash a guy or two, especially in the situation that I'm in where I'm a little bit desperate for saves. Kyle Finnegan and Hunter Harvey, I think, are a decent pairing, especially at the price I'm paying for them. One way or the other, it's very likely that I have the closer in Washington. Now, does that mean 25 saves? Does it mean 20? Does it mean 30? I don't really know. But it was kind of the only place where I'm really, really lacking at this point in my draft. So I'm happy with those picks. I went with Brian De La Cruz in the 17th round. I needed outfielders. This is another position where I was kind of lacking, not in terms of stats, but in terms of actually having guys to put into my starting lineup. I only had the two outfielders, the two Cubbies at this point. So I went with De La Cruz. I think that he has easy 30 home run potential. I'm not sure he'll get there, but I think that he is, you know, very, very easily like a 20-plus potential guy. You're looking at a couple steals. Another guy who's very solid in batting average, just a very balanced fantasy asset that I'm not paying an expensive price for. A guy that I've been pretty interested in Brian De La Cruz, so happily took him there. I kind of punted on catcher. Catcher's not a position that I'm terribly interested in most drafts. I've got a lot of Wilson Contreras this year because there was just like a reasonable price tag on him in a lot of my drafts, but generally speaking, I'm more of a punt catcher type of guy, and I went with Alejandro Kirk in round 18. I think that last year was just really a bad season for him, and we're going to see a bounce back from him. Again, a massive batting average asset. He's in a decent enough lineup where he's going to probably have 60 runs, 60 RBI type of deal, probably 15 homers. For a catcher that I'm drafting in round 18, he's a totally fine consolation prize. Nothing really to write home or get too excited about, but fine nonetheless. I went with Nelson Velasquez next round because I needed another outfielder still, and he's another guy where I just think the potential is just massive for him. If he's able to have a regular role in Kansas City, like it looks like he does at this point. I'm not 100% sold, but it looks like he does. He could easily be a 35 home run guy. 30 to 35 home runs. He could potentially steal you 10 bases and have a batting average that's not going to hurt you either. Probably in the 230, 240 type of range. I really, really like Nelson Velasquez this year. If you guys can draft him, maybe it's a little bit too presumptuous to take him as your fourth outfielder. But in a 15-team league, I really don't mind it that much here. I think he was a fine pick for me in round 19. Outfield is a position where a lot of guys do pop up throughout the year that you can add. So falling behind there is not the worst thing in the world. It's not my favorite thing, don't get me wrong. But I think I made up for it pretty well. And I rounded out the starting five with Chris Bryant. He's a risky guy. Don't get me wrong. He is a pretty risky guy here. But then again, if Chris Bryant does play a full season or something close to it in Colorado, I mean, if you look at any projection system, they're generally, most of the projection systems anyway, have him going for about 100 plus games. ATC has him for about 113 games. Steamer for 130. You're looking at close to 20 home runs, a handful of steals, pretty good batting average, and it's Colorado, it's Coors Field. You're going to get a little bit of a boost there. The team sucks, no question about it. The lineup around him sucks. But playing in Colorado for half your games is definitely a boost. So at the least, like while he is healthy, I'm going to be starting him in that outfield spot and feel pretty good about it. Ranger Suarez is who I went with in round 22. Just another piece of the Phillies rotation. He's not somebody that I love so much. Just a guy to round out the starting rotation with. Nothing too crazy to write home about. I think he's fine. But again, this is like 15 team just filling up the back end of the draft here. I went with Jake Cronenworth in round 23. Jake Cronenworth is in my starting lineup at this point in the corner infield spot. It looks like he's going to bat third in San Diego, which is pretty appealing if he's right around Tatis and Machado. Like, that's pretty damn solid for me. I'll take that pretty much any day of the week. Those guys are going to be batting right around him. He might not be amazing, right? But the runs and RBI should be there. He's going to chip in some steals. He's going to hit some homers. The batting average isn't terrible, probably like 250-ish. I don't love it, but I think he's not bad, especially at this point of the draft, round 23.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Brian Abreu was who I went with in round 24. I think he can be somebody where even if he is not giving you massive save numbers, which he's not likely to do with Josh Hader in town and Presley there as well, he'll maybe give you a couple of wins, but those strikeouts are so crucial. I've made up for some of the strikeout deficit, I think, with Abreu. He is a reliever who could potentially give you like close to 100 strikeouts. And maybe you don't start him every single week, but I think there's a lot of weeks where we kind of desperately look for a streamer to keep up with. And I think going with Brian Abreu here in round 24, he's a guy I'll be starting quite a bit. Round 25, in all of TGFBI, I, to this point, have drafted DJ LeMahieu at the lowest price that anybody paid for him. He is projected, by all accounts, by Roster Resource, by Mike Herlin's MLB playing time. Looks like what the Yankees are showing us. Like, it looks like DJ LeMahieu is going to be the leadoff hitter there in front of Soto and Judge. That's worth a gamble. He's on my bench. Like, no problem at all there taking a shot on DJ LeMahieu. I like him a lot at that price. Like, it's free pretty much. Again, I don't like using that word, but at that point, it pretty much is. Lamont Wade in round 26. He's probably not an everyday type of player. Again, this is just like these are bench guys that I'm taking shots on. Lamont Wade has shown us in the past that he can be a really, really damn good underrated baseball player. He can give you, especially in on-base percentage leagues, which this is not an on-base percentage league, of course, but he is somebody that is pretty damn appealing. I did draft him in Tout Wars where it is on base. Here, I still think I can get like close to 20 homers, a couple steals, like a 250 batting average, potential for a little bit more as well if he does happen to fall into a full-time job. I think he's a strong side platoon guy, but again, this is a bench spot that I don't really feel too strongly about one way or the other, but I do think there is some upside with Lamont Wade at the end of your draft. My second catcher was Travis d'Arnaud. Again, nothing too special here. I've pretty much full punted the position. I think that he's going to play more than we think, though. Sean Murphy is going to get the lion's share, probably, but look at how it started out last year before d'Arnaud got hurt. He was playing more than we thought, pretty much, you know, more than Murphy was playing early on in the season. So there's a chance that I do run into a few months, potentially, of regular at-bats in that Atlanta lineup, which does look pretty sweet here for my catcher, too, considering I punted the position. Brett Beatty in round 28, I think he's a potential post-hype sleeper type of guy. Not somebody that I actually do have a couple of shares of him, but it's just because he's so cheap. If he is able to actually kind of break out a little bit like we thought, then it might look interesting. If he's able to work his way into the Alonso and Lindor range of the Mets lineup, he could be somebody that does hit this year. In round 28, I don't have any problem taking a shot on him. Aaron Ashby in round 29, it looks like he is going to get a shot in the rotation, at least to start for Milwaukee. He is somebody who we've had a lot of injury concerns with and performance issues as well, but the potential is just really, really, really there. So again, this is a bench spot where it could really, really pan out for me, Aaron Ashby. He could be a stud. He could absolutely break out, or it could lead to a drop in the first couple weeks of the season. But at this price, it doesn't pain me to find out at all. My last draft pick in round 30 was Mitch Haniger. Mitch Haniger, I don't know that there's going to be much there, but going back to Seattle where he had the magic, if he's able to be healthy, we could be running into 30 home runs potentially if things break right. And outfield was a position where I was really lacking, so backing that up a little bit, I really like it there. So Mitch Haniger is my 30th round pick. Let me know what you think of this team. You can send me a message over on Twitter, JoeRico99. You can check them out, the live draft boards. You can check out drafts that are still going on because some people are dragging their feet a little bit. If you go to the NFBC and look through the forums, they do have the TGFBI full boards posted for you there. JoeRico99 and EthosFantasyBB are the Twitter handles. Check out our draft guide. It is in the description. You are going to be seeing an updated Orico 250, my top 250 rankings by the time you are hearing this. So make sure you are checking that out as well. It will reflect some of the things we have seen in spring training, and the projections are going to get a bit of a facelift this weekend as well. But guys, that'll do it. Tomorrow, we will look back on the last few days of spring training games. But until then, take care and have a great night.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.